So this is class 5 of the module on no self and selflessness. Is that about right? Yeah, so we covered some material and just before Christmas break, and I realized that we didn't really have a chance to talk about the material as a group because we were and the timing was a little bit odd. So John presented on the 8th of December and then provided some meditations, some contemplations to take home. But then the next class we had the Tyler Dewar DVD, which was, I thought, a really good presentation, but it also occupied most of the space in the class. And the Tyler Dewar DVD was on more about the Course impermanence, and I provided a take-home handout on the topic of momentary or subtle impermanence. But again, a lot of time has passed. So I think the thing I'd like to do before starting my own presentation is just to ask who has... whether there are questions or comments or about the two classes, or did anyone try the contemplations and enjoy it? Did anyone try the contemplations and really hate it? Or just this, anything that you want, that anyone would like to share about the material that we covered?
From the other, one of the readings was about the apple. Is that right? When it was one about the impermanence of the apple. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of did that one, and then I thought, well, then I should try one and make up my own. And so just do one. And so when I sit, I look out a window and a bird landed. And I sort of did a little bit on the impermanence of the bird being there and not being there, which is kind of And the bird being there or not being there is always impermanent because they appear and disappear almost instantly. It's really interesting.
You actually, when you said I made up my own, that's actually one of the key points that I wanted to bring up, which is that contemplation should not be treated as something rigid where you're given a piece of paper and you only do the work that's on that particular
right.
page. So.
So, I mean, I knew you were supposed to make one up, but then I thought I made the apple one up, and then I was like, oh, wait, no, I read
Did you write the poems? I love the poems.
No, the poem. I wish I could take credit for that. The poems are by Rumi, who is a.
Oh wow!
But I was browsing through. I liked the fact that the poems are self-contained because I was trying to find some excerpts from Dharma books, but those require a lot of the ones I found require that you understand the definitions of the terms, and I thought the Rumi poems stood up very well by themselves.
Are these his titles?
I believe my feeling is that they didn't have titles. I believe that he dictated all of his poems, or because the titles of the poems in the book I have are basically just the first line or the topic of the poem. So you didn't know that he had that connection to the Buddhist teachings. and so.
It also seems that if people had experience with contemplation on the retreat, I'd love to hear what kind of encounters, because that's very much continuous with what we've been up to. I wondered if there's anything from that you'd want to share.
Actually, I was a bit surprised that
there wasn't
formal contemplation in the way that there was discussion of the material, but there wasn't. Topics were brought up, but it wasn't. There was never presented in the contemplation format. Is that
right? Yeah.
I think there's some contemplation of the aspirations.
Oh, okay.
Well,
you're
that's
you're,
true.
Yeah.
Not as learning how to contemplate.
There was one time when I thought he was saying we're going to contemplate something, and I sort of sat getting ready, and then he talked about contemplating it or his experience contemplating it. I think it was the presence. I don't remember.
This is precious human birth.
Precious
Yeah. We've already said contemplate.
Right.
And that wasn't what we did.
Yeah, and I think it's often the problem that there's a conventional meaning of a word and the technical meaning of the word, and you don't know which one is going to be exercised.
I'm just wondering if anyone has been working with any of this material and has noticed any kind of a shift or, you know, or more confusion or less confusion. Or, but maybe we all forget because it's so long ago. I don't know.
Well, if I can say, to me there has been, although, you know, I wasn't at this retreat or anything, but I'm going to generalize and say, you know, anywhere in the past year or something. I finally noticed something was going on. don't be surprised, but it was the flash. Boom. I always start, you know, every day I use the flash throughout the day, and it brings me right down to a moment that I consider a gap. And to me, that's precious, if you want to use that word.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I think that we'll move on then. The material that we already presented, I think one of the things that it shows is that there's actually, contemplation can cover a fairly wide range of procedures. I think that, you know, John provided a couple of very, you know, short duration contemplations that we did in class, and then some somewhat longer contemplations that had a fair amount of content, you know, and a fair amount that to contemplate in each one, you know, and I provided a couple of exercises, and I also, you know, that involve an activity that you pursue actively as opposed to simply sitting in a meditative state. And also a lot of the books I've been reading about the process of contemplation use scripture or poetry, you know, and the idea that you would read a short text or a few lines of verse and, you know, and then sit with that in different ways. So I provided a few exercises on subtle impermanence and a few definitions, because the coarse and subtle impermanence are very, you know, they have a somewhat technical meaning, and it's good to just have that written down. I'd like to start by reading another section by Andy Carr on subtle impermanence that spoke to me pretty strongly. And then the thing that I would like to try after that is to have a guided contemplation in the class. And I'll talk about that a little bit just before. So I also have copies of this. You don't need to take notes on the text. I do have copies of this, the sheet that I'm using, so you'll be able to get the text to take home with you. So the Andy Carr starts by quoting the Buddha. As the Buddha said in the Diamond Cutter Sutra, all phenomena are like a star at dawn, like a bubble in a mountain stream, like a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, like a flickering lamp, a phantom, and a dream. And then he says, a candle flame, a type of flickering lamp, is a good example of subtle momentary impermanence. What happens when we go into a restaurant or a shrine room and see candles burning? If we see a candle flame, look away, and later notice the flame again, we think that it is the same candle flame that we saw burning a few minutes before. In fact, it is not. The first instance of the candle flame is completely gone. Because the two images look so similar, we take them to be one thing. We make this mistake all the time when we see objects, faces, houses, rivers, or landscapes. We do not recognize subtle impermanence. Thought covers it over. And then he goes on to say that the candle itself is a good example of the impermanence of the continuum. The many instants of the candle seem to form one continuum that gets shorter and shorter as the candle burns away. And I know that since I like poetry, I read this paragraph and I started looking for poetry about the candle flame because I thought the idea of the subtle impermanence was so fascinating. But every poem I found focused on the other kind of impermanence, the notion of a candle being extinguished after the candle is the metaphor for your life and it's all too short. And so I thought that was interesting that there's two qualities of impermanence in the candle, but that we worry about the fact that the candle will go out and don't think about how much it changes from moment to moment. So I think what I'm going to do now is, that kind of sets the stage for the contemplation. I'll ring the gong, allow for a couple of minutes of, a minute or two of shamatha, and then I'll read a few sentences fairly slowly with a little space in between. I've got two paragraphs of prose and a short poem, again by Rumi rather than by me. And as a person who talks fast, I'm trying very hard to talk slowly and leave space between my sentences. If I sound somewhat awkward compared to my normal demeanor, that's the
no problem.
All right, so. Oops. A few little shamatha. Think about a candle flame. It is a process in constant change. At every moment, a new bit of wax is melting and turning into flame. If you take a casual glance, the flame seems to be a single solid thing. But if you look closely, you can see that the substance of the flame changes at every instant. does your mind in any way resemble a candle flame? Is your mind a process in constant change? In almost every moment, does a new thought arise? And does the new thought distract you, energize you, or annoy you? And is that thought simply replaced by another thought in the next moment? Is your mind a single solid thing, or does it change at almost every instant? And if your mind is not a single solid thing, are you a single solid thing? And now the poem. As essence turns to ocean, the particles glisten. Watch how in this candle flame instant blaze all the moments you have lived. So what did people think or what did people feel? Michael?
As you read the read the line again, there's a poem. There's a line in that poem.
The candle flame? Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch how in this candle flame instant blaze all the moments you have lived.
Yeah, blaze. So at that moment, it was liberation from the idea that only what's happening at this particular moment is what matters. That every moment of life is a moment of life. And that's hard to put into words, but there was a strong sensation that hit as you said that, which was liberating.
Good. I'm glad. Thank you.
I was remembering just different worries that I've had. I'm sort of an obsessive worrier, and how over, I don't know why, whichever ones came up, but how there'd be one, you know, from several years ago, and then it would pass, and then another one, that would pass. So that's kind of cool. I just get different ones to fill in, but yeah, that became clear in a way that hadn't been before.
I think I felt a certain level of just acceptance of how my mind operates, you know, by kind of looking at a candle that's so beautiful and how it changes all the time and flickers all the time, and then thinking that your mind does something similar. It just sort of put it in a very positive light for me. No pun intended.
I think I like that point because sometimes so much of meditation is, oh, I can't get things to settle down, you know, and then feeling a sense of like I'm not doing this right, and that to be able to appreciate that, to be able to use the changeable qualities of your mind as a vehicle to seeing what's going on, as opposed to just another impediment you have to work with.
Yeah, to get frustrated with one another, just to, again, accept it.
Yeah.
It seemed very similar. Sorry.
Okay. You started.
It seemed very similar to the metaphor of river, with the flowing, turning from, you know, going from wax into flame and then smoke, and very much like water going through a river or a canyon.
It reminded me of a discussion I was having. My youngest is a college student. She's home and she's studying physics. We had a great discussion about impermanence in physics. Nothing sits still.
Yeah.
Nothing ever sits still in physics. And and it was good timing for me too, because I'm going through a whole series of loss of different flavors lately. And today I had a moment where it just felt really a lot. Like there was a lot of loss there. And I remembered settling into it and thinking, that's okay, it's not permanent. And finding a deep solace in that simple concept that this is not permanent. And I kind of, at that moment, remembered every time I've ever thought, oh God, this is just terrible. And you feel like it's permanent. You feel like it's so solid right there. And it just had such a different feeling today in that moment, where it's just, okay, yeah, I can do this.
Yay.
I have a problem now with the expectation that if I go to meditate, it's going to take care of that flaming flame in my mind. Megan and I have had some emails back and forth, and I was talking about hope and fear. You know, why don't we talk about hope and fear? And then I emailed again. I said, I don't want to talk about hope and fear. There's this wild elephantness, which just comes from Pema Chodron's tapes on the way of the Bodhisattva, or the Bodhisattva mind, way of the Bodhisattva. Anyway, there's this wild elephant of hope and fear in my mind running around. And I actually have to live with that right now. I can't, you know, it's sort of like, oh, I sure want this Buddhism to pull me out. So, you know, and it's just not happening. And I guess that... You're going on the march? I mean, so it's that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So the flame to me, the river actually is a more peaceful metaphor for me. The flame is burning. And flames go out also.
Mm-hmm.
So the flame metaphor, I kind of have a little bit of... It feeds the wild elements.
Yeah.
Fuel that wild element with hope and fear. Yeah.
What spoke to me about the flame metaphor was the fact that it, as opposed to, you know, that it's actually sitting exactly in one place, but that it's constantly changing.
It never does. The flame never sits in one
place. Well, but that it's occupying the same space then, you know.
Never
and
does. Never. I've never seen a flame that occupies the same space.
But it's sort of in the same.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It appears
in the neighborhood.
Yeah, you know, the candle flame has not jumped from but let's pretend that's a real candle.
Right.
A little rotating thing. It doesn't suddenly hop over to the exit sign under normal circumstances.
Right. Yeah.
Well, the thing that this reminds me of is the way Pam was talking about it in a different context, but she talks about that lumping idea, turning the thing that isn't solid into something solid. And so I was thinking about this when you were talking, Janet, that we look at a candle and we think, candle. And we know it's changing, but we also really don't know. We don't appreciate the pieces, the way the parts are being consumed. And if we slow that down, like you begin to say, oh yeah, that is like I think you agree, you know, it's that is true.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, I do agree.
And so, if that's true about that, what else is that true about?
Oh, everything. It still doesn't make me feel any better.
No.
Yes.
Is that what you're looking for?
I know that, you know, when we tell our if I tell my neighbors that Peter was on a meditation retreat or I was on a meditation retreat, they all do this little like bliss
expression. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that slim woman in tight white leotard
right.
on the cover of every meditation card.
Right.
The next question is, well, how do you stop your thoughts?
I think sometimes it goes a little more smoothly to go into that spaciousness and that emptiness. And when you're full of a lot of agitation, it's very, very difficult to kind of relax into that.
Absolutely. But that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, as you know, every...
Right.
Yeah, and in fact, there's something fabulous about the exhaustion with trying to fix anything that sort of settles in. That's like walking through the door, actually.
Yeah,
well done, that.
It reminds me of a meme I saw. It says, the secret to life is you're not in control.
That's right.
You know, but actually, the fact, I'm glad, actually, Linda, you said that the flame metaphor kind of creeps you out, because it doesn't, you know, that was what spoke to me, and the idea is that you can build your own.
You can build your own.
Yeah,
and actually, I was meditating on fungus tonight.
Spreading fungus in a swamp or something?
No, I mean, just what's its existence without a substrate or without something that it employs in order to get energy?
Right. Yeah, I had a boyfriend who was really into slime molds.
Actually, they are going to, if anything, slime molds.
We can talk about fungus. We can talk about fungus after class.
Something occurred to me during when we were reading and in between that I don't think I really recognized before, which is that and language is kind of part of what's going on here. Language calcifies things. It solidifies things. note that we use the word flame. Mm-hmm. We have a noun for that. Mm-hmm. River, we have a noun mm-hmm. for that too. And thought is another noun. And noun, by any noun in language, is a thing. We thingify it. Mm-hmm. And it kind of mm-hmm. makes it stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's where the gerund comes in. Mm-hmm. It's a little handier. That there's burning mm-hmm. and there's flowing. Mm-hmm. And there's thinking. Well, maybe it's, you know, maybe that's a little too much fine point of language. Basically, I was realizing that what we use the word thought, there's no such thing as a thought mm-hmm. that occurred to me. There's no single solid thing that stops.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the thinking mind, it seemed to me, just watching my own mind, was very much like a river or a flame, in that it was never in from one instant to the next. One little, you know, epsilon to the next, never the same. And so there was never a thought. There was only this constantly flowing process going on. And we think of them as being isolated, distinct thoughts, but I don't know, I was kind of watching that. I couldn't come up with any single isolated, distinct thought. It was just a constant process, like glowing gases that just are there, constantly evaporating into the sky.
Mm.
And so it's a little hard to latch on to any of that up here mm-hmm. when I sort of see it as that.
But I think we do solidify, we tend to, like someone said, mm-hmm. what did you think about?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have like, I thought about, you know, mm-hmm.
yeah.
this thing, I thought about a bird, I thought about
mm-hmm.
the wind.
Mm-hmm. And it's not that it's not valuable to talk about thinking in those terms, it's not what's actually happening. It's just sort of we're sort of discussing this flow about this thing and then this other flow about this thing when we're talking about thinking about a topic. It's just a flow and then somebody else's flow. And the discussion about those things is just more flow. There's no actual single thing going on there.
Doesn't happen in here.
To me, it feels like we're trying to unlearn things. The way we solidify, it's sort of like you're talking with language. We're trying to break it back down again because over time, being in a body, getting here, growing older, we're making things more and more solid. And putting it in categories.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to dismantle that idea.
Mm-hmm. And apropos that, I found it much easier to pay attention to almost anything else than the changing quality of what I was actually thinking about, right? It was, whenever you spoke, I was like, oh, wait a minute. I'm already down some little rat hole. Because it's habitual, right? Much more familiar, much easier to turn from this. It's not there to, you know, that thing or that thing that happened today or what I'm going to eat when I go
it's
home.
It's like a game show. I want to win.
Right.
Give it a name.
Yeah.
So I think every time we solidify into some concept, we're losing the flow, the reality of what's really going on, which is it's not solid. And even if you really look at that concept, it's not solid. That's the thing. If we start applying the technique of, you know, what is it made of or going into it, it's not that solid. But it is that thought, one thought after another, it just keeps us in this in this real tight space, actually.
It's called baggage.
That's helpful.
Or desperate search for security.
just so framework.
We feel like that can give us some sucker to have some kind of familiarity to go back to these very frozen little corpse things we carry around.
Well, Megan Starr, the physicist, probably has an equation to describe the
Yes, but she's also an artist. So the neat thing is she's looking outside of that and going, isn't that funny? This equals this. But yeah, it can be limiting at the same time.
So to get to that last line, since all that is just a flow, then that would imply that the self is just a flow also.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's no actual noun, the self. There's maybe selfing.
Yeah.
And actually, what the selfing may be, I'm sort of viewing this, that my attempt to apply a conceptual overlay or framework on that constantly flowing set of thinking and thoughts, the overlay of the conceptual framework solidifies it all. And that overlay is my constructing of the self.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
what it kind
of
feels like.
It doesn't exist outside of that, just in that conceptual framework.
Mm-hmm. Susan was saying very much a similar thing, that she's hung up on this is her latest anxiety thing. But if she remembers back that there was another one that she's can hardly remember, that was the most important thing at one point. Right. And then before that, we solidified all along these things as my big deal.
That's exactly.
So it's the same. Exactly.
But I think what we see in all this, and we start to see it, is the patterns.
Right.
We start to see patterns. Patterns tend to sort of clarify.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as though I'm worrying about the same thing all the time. I'm worrying.
Right.
And the worry tends to follow certain guidelines or groups that
I become aware that I've picked my enemy for the afternoon or my enemy for the hour. There's always this, not as much enemy as the irritant. You know, there's a little space for the thing that's bugging me right now, but that things move in and out of that slot rather rapidly.
That's a cool thought.
But you're always trying to then. How you're describing that, because you're building a case for whatever you're thinking at the time. It could be, I'm going to build a case for my anger right now and create that. And then the next moment, it's like, I'm going to build a case for my creativity, and I'm going to build a case for that. And then for love. And it's almost like each one, even that, you build some kind of construct for that, as much as you do for a positive, as much as you do for a negative.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And where does that get you?
Just more conceptual framework.
More conceptual.
Divorced from actual experience. And pull us away.
Or from the truth.
They pull us away from the reality of actual
from
experience.
Right.
From the present moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did you say?
From the present moment. Because in a way, they're also expressions of hopes and fears, right? I very much want to be the sort of person who is loving, or at least is seen as loving.
Right.
Right. And that's.
Yeah.
It sounds good, but it's not. It's made up on some level.
Aren't all concepts made up?
Yeah.
So I think, is there anyone else that wants to? Does anyone actually not? Didn't like or didn't enjoy this, but was afraid to say anything. Sometimes there's a feeling of it's all positive and everyone's getting such high quality experiences here.
Well, I really enjoyed the poem. And I had a similar experience when you were talking about braids, right? It was a sort of braids of intense energy. It was quite powerful.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So it's very nice.
One other observation just about contemplation in general, if that's where we are in this conversation.
I think it is, or we could be.
Yeah. So as I've worked with these just a little bit, what I find is no matter what it's like when I'm sitting with the contemplation, I'm surprised at how it will pop up later.
Mm.
So just having thought about the candle and the way it's impermanent, then every time I see a candle, the notion that it's impermanent, I'm in flow, comes to mind, and it refreshes the sort of, well, if there was an experience, sometimes it refreshes the experience, but at the very least, it brings to mind that, the view that's true, and it's not, I'm not waiting until I sit down again to think about it. So it's really quite powerful in a way, and sort of has this long tail that I didn't expect, and has an ongoing effect, I find.
Is that what, in the one meeting, I think you talked about, like what you're trying to do with this, is to sort of change your basic reaction to certain things, saying that kind of, it actually kicks in.
I think so.
That's really good. I've been burning a candle now during my meditation. I really enjoy it. And I started to get really sad when my first candle.
Oh.
I hadn't thought about it. It never occurred to me. Oh, I'm going to use that. I might just leave the...
Stop.
It's an object lesson.
The day that I came home from the retreat, the shelf in our closet that has been in place for 10 years spontaneously collapsed. It was like another one of these reminders of impermanence.
Oh,
just jumped out of the blue. And, the cosmos trying to keep pushing little reminders in our direction.
So thank you for the candle.
It all comes around.
So I have, let's see, if people are done with this, their feedback, there's one last thing by Andy Carr I'd like to read, which is not, it's actually not as much about impermanence as just the thing I wish I'd read before I opened up a single Buddhist text. And it's basically just his advice on how to study the Dharma. And I was just, see if you see yourself in any of these, and I'll tell you which one I am afterwards. So this is his sort of general overview, because his book talks about the first, study, reading or listening to teachings before you start contemplation.
And his book is titled
Contemplating Reality.
Andy Carr, K-A-R-R.
And that's on my handout, so people will know.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't listen or study like a politician, clinging to your point of view or some party line. Who cares if you have studied great teachings in the past? What's the point of studying the Dharma for self-confirmation? As the great Indian teacher Atisha said, the best spiritual friend is one who attacks your hidden faults. The best instructions are the ones that hit those faults. Don't listen or study like a movie critic, evaluating the language and style of the teacher rather than listening to the substance of what he or she teaches. You might be able to amuse your friends with some sharp criticism later on, but in the end you will pay a price. Don't listen or study like a consumer, picking and choosing among teachings and teachers the way you would choose detergent in the supermarket. All of the Buddha's teachings present the truth and are worth studying and understanding. You might not know the value of a particular teaching at the time you hear it, but 10 or 20 years from now, it might provide you with a critical piece of the puzzle. Don't listen or study like an orphan, feeling too pathetic to be able to understand what is being taught. The Dharma is about you, not some obscure points in calculus. So if you keep working at it, you will definitely understand. And don't listen or study like a Dharma groupie, so infatuated with the messenger that you never get the message. Yeah, I'm a movie critic. Or maybe movie critic slash professor with a tendency to footnote things. Anyway, that isn't meant to, you know, we don't have to do a confessional section here, but I just, since I was opening up to quotes from Andy Carr, I just really wanted to share that with the group, so. And that is basically the material that I have.
Good, thank you, thank you. Good, so just to put this all in context, our intention for this module, 17, looking at self and selflessness, is this process of really deconstructing the self. And it's a little different the way we're doing it, because we're not just following one text, and we're not just one person or just the teachers that you usually hear. We're all sharing in this together. And it's really a personal exploration. It's not something you're really going to find in a book. The guidelines are there, and the way of analyzing using analytical meditation or contemplation is there and is being presented, but it's up to each of us to take that and incorporate it in our own practice and work with it. And if it's difficult to work with it, or if there's resistance, then that's a message too. So I think I'm going to actually put something up within a couple days on the website. So keep watching the website, and there'll be more things coming under the module. Next week, we have a guest speaker. His name is Joseph Crane. He's a good friend of all of us. And I'm not sure exactly what he's going to talk about, but it's the subject range, so it might be working more with the skandhas. I think he might go into the skandhas.
We just so,
what's that?
We just our favorite skandhas.
You can contemplate your favorite.
I have this
skandhas.
Image of a grade school science fair where everyone has
a poster. Maybe we can each have a booth and do a representation of our little thingy, whatever it is, and we could all take turns and go around and visit each other.
Dioramas.
That's good.
Also.
Yeah. So if you have things that you're not getting or want to know more about, just give feedback to any of us, and we'll try to incorporate things as we go. It's not like we're laying out some particular fixed curriculum. We're basically working with how we're getting the material or not, or where we are. So whatever you have to contribute back, to us, that would be great. Okay. Oh. Am I finished? Oh, perfect.
Yeah.